past 40 years, I've said the same thing on this day of the year. So I love this weekend.
I know you do.
Don't call me. Don't bother me. Leave me alone. Now that I have the opportunity to watch Thursday and Friday too, I'll be in front of my television set because it's a Masters weekend, and it's more than I don't feel this way about the U.S. Open, the PGA, or even the British Open. I like watching them, but the Masters is something extraordinary and special to me, and I can't wait.
Yeah, two things. I think for most Canadians, it's the beginning of summer or spring, or we've had our last blizzard.
It means the weather's changing. If you're not on the golf course yet, it means you will be soon.
Plus, if you are a golf fan and you never have the good fortune of actually playing Augusta National, you still know the course. And so, and listen, Bob, you and I both remember when we never saw the front nine. We never, there was decades and decades. They refused to allow TV cameras.
We didn't see Amen Corner either.
Right. So there was a, for them to let us see the whole golf course and see particularly the back nine, Amen Corner 16, the walk up 18, we all know it. We all know it. We all think that we've lived it. And whether it be golfers that we liked or just the tension of that last Sunday afternoon, it is a magical time, and it's got exclusivity, it's got political issues, but it's still a great golf tournament to watch if you want the fun watching a golf tournament.
I've been there once. Didn't play, but I watched. I was there for the entire week. Have you been?
No.
Is it on your bucket list?
Not as a spectator, but I'd love to play it. But I know I never will. So.
Well, I'd still love to play it, but just to have been there once, it's such an extraordinary place. And our guests, both of whom have been there, one of them played in the Masters, the other one got kind of, as I recall...
He got screwed.
He got screwed out of it. Both of them were winners on the PGA Tour, which should qualify you to play at Augusta.
You should ask Ian why he didn't get it. You should ask.
Well, one of them got in, and the other one didn't get a chance because of a fluke.
He got screwed.
Two guys that, if you're a Canadian golf fan, you know. They are both pals of mine, and I think John's too. Ian Leggett and Richard Zokel will join us, and we'll take a look ahead to the best week of the year. It's the Masters at Augusta, Georgia, beginning tomorrow. And we'll chat about it when the program continues after these messages. Well, the program commences. Bob McCowan, John Shannon with you, and two guys who will be familiar to sports fans and certainly golf fans. Across the country and around the world and up your street. Ian Leggett and Richard Zokel join us on the eve of the Masters Championship, an event in which, Zokel, you played in the Masters one time, am I right?
Once, yeah, 1993.
And I know you've told me this story, Lego, 50 times, and I never remember it. You won at Phoenix, but you didn't play at the Masters. Tell me why. Again,
Tucson, they had a 2-year period where they didn't let the winners categories in. So yeah, anyway, and I got close off the money list that year. They had the top 10 not otherwise exempt, and I was 11th on the money list going in that week too. So but you know, unlike you, Bob, I've been fortunate to play there a few times.
Thank you very much. and I want to thank you very much for the invitation to join you. Jerk. Well, here there's so many things we can say about Augusta National and this event. It's the biggest golf tournament in the world, isn't it?
Absolutely. Zoe can reiterate this. There's no doubt about it. There, you know, unless you're European, unless you're, you know, Irish, Scottish, you know, English, I would have to say that there isn't a player in the world, especially on the PGA Tour, a tour player that wouldn't, you know, put the Masters on the top of their list of what needs to be on their resume. So, you know, with that, you know, I think there's a lot of guys this week that need that Masters on their resume to validate their career. I think there's a lot of guys that, you know, when you look at a guy like Ben Curtis, for instance, I mean, he's got a British Open on his resume, really almost flies completely under the radar. Nobody flies under the radar when they have a Masters on their resume. So I think that, you know, it is the event that all tour players, you know, have to have on there, especially if you do want to be validated as one of the greatest players that's ever played the game.
Dick, you agree?
Absolutely. It's the Masters is that event, that one event that if you're you've been dreaming since you were a little boy, a junior golfer, everyone, it becomes such an important aspect in your life to view, and then you aspire to play in it. Once you get into it for the first time, you're so overwhelmed with achieving this dream that the biggest barrier to performance is you're in awe and you're just trying to calm it down a little bit. And that's because it's such an important aspect in every professional golfer's mind. And
is there something that driving down Magnolia Lane, is there something that jumps out at you right away that yes. says, hey, I'm here?
Well, I got to tell you this story. It's actually the Monday, like Sunday before, you know, you get into Augusta National, you get settled in your home, you're chomping at the bit. You can't wait for Monday to come around to play that golf tournament. And typically on a tour event, my wife would, you know, you get a courtesy car. My wife would drive me to the golf course for the, you know, to start the event. And it's 7 o'clock on Monday morning in a typical tour event. No one's there at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I remember we're driving down Magnolia Lane. My wife just got her, you know, it's 7 o'clock, 6:30 in the morning. And we're driving up there. She's in her, you know, jogging outfit, no makeup, no. And we're driving down and there's like 10,000 people around there as you come around that circle. And she goes, holy blank. She's freaking out because she's got to get out of the car. There's 10,000 people that are clapping. It's just a surreal situation. And she gets around into the car. The car's running. She's trying to start it. And she's freaking out. It was such a funny experience. And actually, I was talking to her this morning about it. And she goes, yeah, I absolutely remember that. It was a horrible experience for her. But it's such a big impact to all players.
Well, and I have been to Augusta for the Masters. I obviously haven't played the golf course. But to speak to your point, Richard, one of the unique things about it is it's sold out every year and literally sold out. And if you don't have a ticket, you are not getting in. And there is no reservation of stands and things. So people bring their chairs, their green chairs, and they are there. Literally, they go, they're lined up before the doors open. Right. Hundreds, maybe thousands of them lined up to go in and put their chair somewhere, whether it's at 16 or wherever right. they want to be. They put their chair down there and then they leave and might come back 4, 5, 6 hours later, but their chair is there. So they have a place to sit. Well, the thing that always drove.
There's an absolute protocol that is an honor is involved. And that's what you're talking about, Bob. Yes. It's been very deeply established there.
Yeah. The supremeness of the Masters, is it at least in part or entirely because it is the only one of the majors that is played at the same site every year? And it is a site that is not just familiar to golfers, it's familiar to every golf fan in the world because we all watch it. US Open goes from course to course, British, PGA, same thing. Is that part of the intrigue, Lego?
Yeah, I think so, absolutely. And I think the exclusivity, and what's interesting too is, you know, and I think to the betterment of the game, they have legitimately declared themselves as a stakeholder. And that is going to improve the game of golf. And they're slowly removing, if you want to call it that, exclusivity and the, you know, the anonymity of what the Augusta National really is, the mystery around it, by the drive, chip and putt, and now the Augusta National Women's event. Mm-hmm. They are opening the door to allowing people to see behind the curtain. Who knows where this goes into the future? But I think in the very beginning, you know, as golfers, we love the game. There are these places in the world that are almost untouchable to a, you know, 99% of the golfing public of the world, and the Cypress Points and, you know, the places like that around the world. And Augusta National is the very top of that. So, but as they start to open up the door a little bit, I think that exclusivity starts to drop down. We're getting to hear more and more about Augusta National. And I think this is all stemmed from allowing women into the club, removing the discriminating practices that they had of the past, and really opening the game up to, you know, like I said, they have declared themselves as a stakeholder in the game. And I think that's going to be great for the game of golf.
One of the other intriguing things, I don't know if you guys have experienced this. Well, maybe Lego, as because you've played there as a, you know, a pedestrian.
What does that make you then if you haven't been there?
Well, one of the things that one of the things that's intriguing about it is, I mean, I went to, I think it was 95, it was Crenshaw won that year. It was right after Harvey Pinnock had passed away, as his longtime teacher. And the decorum of the patrons, as they like to say, I could say fans because they can't kick me out, but they like to call them patrons, the decorum of the patrons and the economic reality at that time, a week pass, because I had a week long pass, had a face value of $100. A pimento cheese sandwich was $1. They didn't gouge you in any way, shape or form. It was like Walmart, you know, in terms of what you had pay to go in.
That what you just said would get you kicked out too. So that would, just for the record.
Well, he's already used Guess and Walmart now. There's no chance of you playing Augusta now.
Well, okay. Can we talk about the golf tournament?
We're talking about the place, you know, a couple of guys who have been there.
Hey, listen, so but the key question is, of all, if you put the top 10 golf courses in the world on a list, where's Augusta?
Not on mine.
No. I think
golf tournaments.
Zoke's,
yes.
Zoke's a little bit of a
I knew that would spark something. That was a
golf courses. When you talk about golf courses, mm-hmm. How good is this golf course? Not the event, not the tournament, not the festivities, not the foo-for-ah. How good is the golf?
Shani, listen, I should have preempted you on this conversation. So, you know, I don't know how long this show is going to be, but go ahead, Zoke.
Yes. So I am of the opinion that Augusta, if someone were to build the exact replica of Augusta National today, it would be the last job they ever got. Keep in mind, the golf course, in my opinion, used to be a remarkable golf course. They'd come in and artificially change on a regular basis. They tried to tiger-proof it. The greens are in excess. It fits perfectly for the Masters tournament, but the golf course, from a pure golf course architecture point of view, it wouldn't be in my top 10. But that's shocking to most people. I have no problem talking against Augusta National in a number of their areas. But it's one of the greatest tournament that I've ever played in. So mm-hmm. Keep in mind, there's everyone falls in line with them, and they have a lot of dough. They have a lot of power. I will take the other side of the argument in a number of ways as it relates to Augusta.
So it's looking like, Shani, it's going to be me and you playing Augusta.
I'm fine. Well, I'm fine to never play it again. I've been there, done that, and that's okay.
You know what I lend this to? And Zoke and I talk about architecture all the time, and we do actually agree on most. But I think when I look at the, you know, you look at Pinehurst number 2, for instance, and when you read the Donald Ross Chronicles and the courses at Pinehurst, So Pinehurst number two, the excessive slope on those greens, that golf course was built as a winter course. Now, remember when Augusta National was built, it was under the same premise, right? And
yeah.
I think that they have now, I mean, they're tipping to the edge on that. But the times I've been there, you know, the greens are, you know, they're, you know, 10.
Don't say it. Don't say it. Don't say it.
They're not excessive. And so they're playable for the membership. The membership doesn't, it's not like Oakmont, where Oakmont, right. I mean, they're 13 all the time, 13, right, 14 yeah. all the time.
Yeah.
So at Augusta National, you know, it's like your own club. You know, they beef it up during the club championship. And, you know, this isn't really the club championship, but it's Augusta National's club championship. And they're there to, the greens are ultimately the only defense to this place. And
right.
we can talk about architecture all day long and the defense mechanisms around old golf courses, but it's a, I love it.
So. The maintenance is remarkable. The place is dreamlike. When you go there, you go, oh my God, this is unbelievable. It's remarkable in so many ways, but we got to separate those categories from an architectural point of view. It's a brutal golf course to play for the Masters.
Well, one of the things that has been changed, you talk about them tiger-proofing the golf course. One of the things they did is they brought in rough. And I mean, I guess when you played there, Dick, there was no rough.
That's right. There was no.
If you hit it off the fairway, you're in the pine straw.
Yeah, and this whole concept of tiger proofing is just an impossibility. You actually play into his favor, but the changes to, you know, it's, I would say that you know, there's so many artificial changes, and I think, quite frankly, the founder Bobby Jones wouldn't agree to it. I mean, it's just changed the golf course so dramatically. But this is something that you can get into a complete discussion over and spend all day talking about.
Yeah, but you would concede, and I think you have already, it is a beautiful place.
Yes.
I mean, my recollection of walking onto the grounds.
Yes.
And I mentioned this repeatedly. For those that, and I guess 99.9% of the people watching or listening to this will never go to Augusta.
And that adds the value because it's restricted. You can't get there. And what you can't have, you want even more.
Right. But weren't you, the thing that shocked me the most when I walked on there was the topography, the elevation changes.
You're right.
Because you can't see them on television and you don't think about them. Like,
yeah, huge going elevation.
Up 9 changes. Or 18 or, well, all over the place. It's not a flat golf course by any stretch of the imagination.
So those are more shocking than the pimento sandwiches?
I got to tell you another thing. I went
no, no. To, the price of the pimento sandwiches. Yeah.
That wasn't the quality.
And in 2008, when I was with Golf Canada, I went down there as a spectator. Lego, you'll appreciate this. And being on site during the tournament on the other side of the ropes, it drove me nuts. I didn't like it. I didn't like it. I wanted to get out of there because, you know, Lego, you and I, when we're at one of those events, I want to be on the other side of the ropes. And I'm not used to being on this side. And I remember talking to Trevor Linden when he's decided to stop playing hockey. I said, would you ever go to a Canucks game? He goes, not in your life. Not before he was became you know,
and he's not going again now either.
And he's not going
Nick,
again
he's not
now.
Going again so
exactly. But the whole idea of being on this side of the ropes, I didn't want any part of it. I wanted to go home and watch the Masters on TV.
Length has become a big issue, obviously, on the tour, and DeChambeau more than anybody else. Does this golf course allow for guys who want to bomb it to bomb it? Or if you guys had that kind of power and equipment, would you be taking a lot of three woods out because of the nature of the golf course?
I think possibly. I mean, but I'll tell you what, we can get into a whole, this is the discussion now as we're, you know, the game is evolving. This is an evolution in the game. This is not a, you know, any kind of groundbreaking shift. This has happened over, you know, decades and you know, centuries of playing the game of golf. So, but I think it's been interesting to me over the last few weeks on tour. If you look at venues where the defense has been, okay, we had a very, very dry Riviera. We had a very, very dry, where was the other event? Sorry, I had it on. But anyway, the greens were extremely firm. And Zoe can reiterate this, and we talk about this in the evolution of the American player at the British Open. most guys grow up playing the golf ball in the air. They do not like to, you know, they do not like it when they can't control the ball on the ground. And, you know, when we saw what happened at Riviera and guys couldn't hit, you know, I was watching it. I think on Sunday, I think it was something like 23% of the players hit it on the 16th green, yeah. Which is, you know, if you play, it's one of the best par threes in the world. I mean, and it's 165 yard. These guys are hitting wedges, nine irons, eight irons there. And it was because of the firmness of the green, you had to be very, very specific. So that is the defense mechanism right now. So I think when you look at the longest players in the world, if you want to shrink the field, then you soften up the golf course. If you want to open the field, you firm up the golf course. And, you know, we'll see where that goes. But unfortunately, the game of golf is played outside, and that variable cannot be controlled that easily.
Well, what we expect is little chance of rain, and they haven't had a lot of rain at Augusta. So we're anticipating it's going to be hard and firm and fast. And that people think that means that the greens are going to be extraordinary. And that's really, and especially as undulating as they are at Augusta, that's going to be a factor. But it also pertains to the fairway because balls do run mm-hmm. at Augusta, right? And well, go
further
ahead, Dick.
To that, when the golf course plays firm and fast, and Lego's absolutely right, it is the defense of it. If you, Phil Mickelson was talking about last November when they played the Masters, you know, hitting a shot into the second green, the ball actually plugged as it landed, like splat, didn't go anywhere. If the players are allowed, or if the golf course is playing that way, it allows the players to just play the air game, and everyone on the tour is brilliant at that. But the separation happens, what Lego's talking about, being firm and fast, is where the ball lands is nowhere near where the ball ends up. And you have to have this knowledge of whether you're landing it in the fairway, depending on the wind, and you know the firmness that ball's going to run 30, 40 yards, maybe, or kick this way or kick that way. Then you have to anticipate what the yardage is where the ball's to the land, and then what it's going to do when it hits. As it relates to landing into like the 13th green, it's going to run and then take the big break. So it forces that player to have that awareness. And if you don't have that awareness, which is a skill, you're going to be in trouble.
Dick, did you go and play Augusta long before Masters week to try and get a sense of it?
I did. I reached out to this fellow named David Culver. David Culver was the former chairman of Alcan. He's a Montreal fellow. And I reached out to him, who's a member. He's one of the only two or three Canadian members. And I went down to Augusta with him to play it. Spent the night, you know, a couple of nights there at the Eisenhower cabin and got the whole experience of it before. So when you qualify to become eligible for the Masters, you're actually a member, a limited member for that year that you're invited. You can take guests there, but they can't play, but they can be with you. And I remember one time I played a practice round and took James Deacon down with me. Remember James?
Oh, passed away very well. Good friend.
And I was able to bring him as a guest, and he was writing for Maclean's magazine and doing an article, and but he couldn't play, but he could attend there with you, which I thought was pretty cool. So during your year that you're invited, you can go and use the facility as a member with limited access for guests.
I before we get into the specifics of this tournament, I got to ask you, did you watch Bryson on the practice tee with VJ watching him swing?
yes.
I'm not sure. I mean, one guy has probably the smoothest, gentlest swing on the tour, and then there was Bryson.
Well, Bryson,
I mean, it was fascinating to watch that.
It is. And Bryson's fascinating, you know, and keep in mind, I think Lego can agree with this, is that, you know, everyone's thinking about how strong how he drives the ball, but his real secret, in my mind, and why he won the U.S. Open is how he putts. And no one's giving him the credit. Like, it was remarkable how he putted those U.S. Open greens. And if he has anywhere near close to that type of putting on this golf course with his strike, with his length, boy, oh boy, this could be a one-sided game complete right out of the get-go if he gets on it.
Well, let's talk about this year's Masters and who we like and who we think should be at or near the top of the leaderboard. This is an exercise in futility, I concede, when it comes to golf tournaments. But nonetheless, we'll do that when we come back. Zokol, Lego, back after this. Bob McCowan, John Shannon, Ian Leggett, Richard Zokol with us as we get set for tomorrow's opening round of the...
This is where, guys, this is where Bob says Justin Thomas is winning the tournament because he won last week, and it's all about momentum, and it's all about emotion. It's all about
it was Jordan Spieth who won last week.
I don't care. I mean,
hey, by the way, I want to go back to...
I always get two guys convinced up. I got the mixed
I want to go back to an earlier comment that Zoke made about when the ball lands and you don't know where it's going to end up. That's exactly how Shanny plays the game, so...
Well, for me it's when I stand up to the ball and get ready to swing, I don't know where it's going to land.
Ian, as you well know, it's all about putting. You know, every time we play, it's all about putting, man.
Well, no, for you it's all about fudging that handicap of yours, but go ahead.
All right, so I said this earlier. I mean, this is truth. The greatest exercise in futility is predicting the winner of a golf tournament. It is the stupidest thing to do.
Yes.
And yet we all do it all the time. But here, let me give you a scenario, because I think in some ways this is sort of a unique year. I mean, okay, Tiger's not playing, but even when Tiger played and won in 19, he wasn't really expected to. It was obviously a possibility, but wasn't really expected. I'm not sure that this year's field has ever been, or the field of the Masters has ever been more wide open than it is this year. So here's the names: Jordan Spieth, Dustin Johnson, Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, Brooks Koepka, and I'll throw in just for fun Rory McIlroy, although Rory McIlroy's performance at majors lately has been surprising. Would you take that field of six or the rest?
Personally, I would take that field. And the reason why, we've talked about this before, Bob, and I love the way that Jordan Spieth has recovered from his game. And I love the fact that Justin Thomas has, if you want to call it, recovered from the incident that happened and what he's been able to do from his mental makeup. I've always said this, I prefer the guy that hates to lose over the guy that likes to win. I don't know if I have not figured out Bryson DeChambeau yet in what camp he fits into. I'm not sure if he's a guy that loves to win or he just hates to lose. I'm not really sure just yet, but I do know for sure that the way, and I know Zoke is going to love diving in on this comment, that Jordan Spieth, to recover from something like this. And Zoke and I know guys that have, as two guys that have struggled through injuries in our life, I've got an incredible amount of respect for the guys like a Scott Verplank and a guy like Steve Stricker and a guy like Jordan Spieth and Tiger Woods and, being able to rematch up the physical and the mental, because the mental never goes away. It really never goes away. Every great player has a library of all the great shots that they hit in their mind. And when they put their hands on that golf club, they know it's going to happen. Now, when the physical goes away and you can't line the two up, this is where conflict happens. And for Jordan Spieth to be able to come back from that is incredible as far as I'm concerned. And that's why I kind of like him this week. I think his, adversity that he's been through is going to lend himself to recovering to what happened to him on that 12th hole, 5 years ago, I think it was, and being able to put that behind him. Because I think for him to get back to where he is right now, that is what he needed to be able to put that situation behind
him. Dick, you taking the field or the six I gave you?
I'm taking the six like Lego rather than the field, because it coming down on Sunday, what it takes, the mental ability to stay in the moment, which is a very difficult thing to do. And you odds go way into the favor in those who know what that's all about in that situation. So I agree with Lego. What Spieth has done is remarkable, in his words, monumental. And the thing I'd like to expand on what Ian said too, as it relates to Spieth in his ascent back, is his ability. Like, he was showing signs and he was trending this way, is the term they use, shooting 61s on Saturdays and getting into contention. But when he got into contention, he's such an amped up guy that he wasn't settling down enough to actually get the job done, to take care of business. But he took care of business this past weekend on with the lead, and how he performed, how he drove his golf ball was exceptional. And he got into that mindset, and it's literally a mindset, like a perfect hand into a perfect glove. And it was done effortlessly. And that's the power that Spieth is bringing into. So I'm with Lego. I think the two guys are Spieth and Johnson, but yes, I'll take the six that you explained over the field.
Well, the intriguing thing and the difference, you know, Lego was talking about emotion, and there's no doubt Spieth is motivated to win, and certainly motivated to win at Augusta. DJ has now won at Augusta, but I don't sense that emotion in him. I think he is far more machine-like, less spiritual, if you will. Am I misreading that, Dick?
He's laid back. I mean, that's how he Dustin goes into everything, and it's an asset for him. It serves him well, it really well, because he's able to let things go where others can't. That would drive them nuts in a post-traumatic way. So he's able to compartmentalize, be in the moment constantly, so he doesn't allow post-trauma to hold him back. He is in post-traumatic growth mentally, and it serves him really well. And I think he's not going to give you signs that all of a sudden he's pumped up and ready to go. That's just not Dustin Johnson. He's going to let his golf clubs do the talking. And if he gets into contention, then that's when you got to worry about him.
Tiger Woods was perceived to have been able to overpower this golf course, hence, you know, de-tigerizing it. But the truth of the matter was, Tiger was such a great player that the fact that he hit it 20 yards further than everybody else really wasn't the whole factor. DeChambeau is the same kind of guy in terms of his ability to hit it further than everybody else. Doesn't have, at least at this point, the skill set that Tiger had. But does this golf course fit him theoretically? And we kind of touched on this earlier. Or, you know, does his length matter as much at Augusta as it does someplace else?
Well, I think, you know, Zoke touched on it earlier. I think that it's almost like a magic trick. He's distracting us with this, you know, ball speed and everything. And we're not even looking at the other aspect of his game that got him to win at Wingfoot. I mean, he drove the ball magnificently around Wingfoot. But, I mean, he left himself, you know, in areas that no different than Tiger Woods was when he came out on tour, into an area of extreme weakness when he came out on tour, which was that kind of, you know, 110-yard shot and in. And he was flawless during Wingfoot. So if there's a weakness in his game, it's definitely his bunker game. It's definitely, you know, his pitching of the ball. And that has everything to do, I don't care what you talk about, you cannot chip with a 5-iron shaft. That's just that's just not going to work for anybody. So we can talk about that all day long too. But I think that, there isn't, if he drives the ball well, and he's even mentioned this, he lives and breathes on emotion. And if he gets going in the wrong direction, he has a very difficult time getting going in the other direction, where a guy like Dustin Johnson, because of his mental makeup, doesn't have that issue.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dick.
I would like to add what blew me away in is how Bryson DeChambeau handled Wingfoot on that Sunday when he made those putts for Eagles, like on the ninth hole. I went, oh my God, this is unreal. So what will determine whether he plays well will be how he performs on these greens. These are Augusta National greens. It's playing firm and fast. And if he dials it in with his putter and has that putting ability the way he did at Wingfoot last year, then I think, you know, he's bringing a gun to and everyone else is bringing a knife to this this confrontation.
Dick, you bring up a really good point, because golf, because through the pandemic, the one thing is that the networks have done a magnificent job with the sound. Yeah, I feel I'm hearing more golfers and more caddies than ever before. I was one of those guys that just perception was I didn't really like DeChambeau. But at the U.S. Open and the last couple of tournaments I've watched him play, I kind of like the guy now. Mm-hmm. His attitude is much more pleasant than I thought it was compulsive. Mm-hmm. And the one thing that you guys have touched on because of his emotion, his resilience, mm-hmm. his ability to forget that he's, you know, double bogeyed 11 and, you know, and then he can go three birdies in a row. His ability to forget his mistakes to me, I think makes him much more attractive and enjoyable to watch as a golfer, even though he's using that 5-iron out of the sand trap for Ian.
Well, you know, he's turned around a lot of people, me included. And when you looked at him a year prior to, you know, look at him in 1999, like he was this spontaneous human combustion. He was going crazy if he wasn't hitting it well on the driving range. And we watched that at the Open Championship. He's a different person now. And you can see it in his, I always look to his body language. It's an echo of what's going on in their mind, not what comes out of their mouth. And he's a happier person. He's more comfortable in the lead. He isn't ready to pop. And you know, so he's releasing his emotions. And I think that has people pick up on that. And I think that's what's causing you, John, to turn around and like him. That's exactly what happened to me as well. And he's fascinating. I don't think, and the good thing is too, in my opinion, is that I don't think people can copy that. He's an anomaly, and he's a tremendous value to the professional golf.
I think when we look at the prior incidents that he's had on tour too, I think he's matured. He's maturing, yes, right in front of our eyes. We look, yes, at the incidents of him marching off greens, not shaking guys' hands, right, acting like a child. I think he's learned his lessons, and we have to respect that. I mean, totally, not everybody's perfect, and this lends itself exactly to TPC, Justin Thomas.
At TPC, Ian, he was the most likable guy that I watched all weekend. I just had fun watching. I had fun watching him, not just for the way he hit the golf ball, but for, and I think I appreciated his short game too, as Dick was talking about, but I had fun. I really enjoyed his personality, his interaction with his caddy. You know, it was a revelation for me.
Well, yeah, this evolution, the evolution of the personality of a golfer on the PGA Tour is not unique. Jack Nicklaus was disliked and sullen in the early part of his career, mm-hmm, partly because I think, you know, because Arnold was there and everybody loved Arnold, and so therefore they had to hate Jack. Mm-hmm. Tiger evolved, his personality evolved over the course of his career. You know, you could argue he wasn't all that likable in the early part, but I want to get to, before we let you guys go, one of the names on that, of the six that I gave you, is an intriguing one. Rory McIlroy looked like, coming out of the gate, he was going to be the best player in the world, and maybe by a long shot, and who knows, maybe almost another Tiger. And he has weeks where he plays well, but he has not played well in majors for quite some time. And his real bugaboo has been opening rounds. He has had more mid to high 70 opening rounds at major championships than you really would expect. Where do you think he's at? And is there some reason, and can anybody explain why Rory McIlroy over and over shoots 74, 75 in opening rounds of majors and then tries to come back?
Well, you know, I think if we turn it toward Augusta National, and I think, again, he's puts a lot of pressure on himself this week as the only major that he doesn't own. And if we reflect back to the first time the world got introduced to Rory McIlroy, and he shot 81 in that last, right, round, and how emotional he was about that. So there's some scar tissue there that he needs to figure out. The good thing about Rory McIlroy, though, and Zoe can tell you about this, is where Bryson DeChambeau is the opposite. Bryson DeChambeau, every player has a certain amount of shots or swings or, you know, contact that they make that needs to validate to them that they have it. Right. And everybody's got a number, you know, it might be 10, might be 1,000. And a player will say, like a Justin Rose is a perfect example. Justin Rose will have four or five really amazing practice sessions, and he's got it. Rory McIlroy needs to hit one shot, and he knows that he has it. He doesn't have it right now. Now, does that mean that any certain point between now and Thursday morning, does he find it or has he found it? I don't know. But that's the way he plays the game. You look at the way that his career has evolved, the roles he gets on, the times he's been world number one to dropping to two, three, four, five, six, back to world number one. That's just the way that he plays the game. He is the opposite of the scientist. He's the field player. He's the guy I like. He's the Seve Ballesteros and Lee Trevino. That's the guy I like to play. And yeah, you can also like the scientist. Doesn't matter. People hate Nick Faldo, and the way he approached the game. I'm not that kind of person. I love to see the flair in the game, and Rory McIlroy's that guy. So does he have it? I don't know. We'll wait and see. But Rory McIlroy's not done. He's far from being done.
To answer your question, Bob, I think it's a it's a mental perspective in how he's evolved. So he's won all these majors except the Masters. He's trying to win that Grand Slam. I mean, look at how he opened up that first round at the Open Championship in Ireland a couple of years ago with a quad and shoots himself right out of it. It's a mindset. It's his expectations. It's what, we're watching Justin Thomas talk about. He's pushing hard to win. This is exactly what Rory's doing. His expectations. He's talking openly about how he doesn't want his personal identity to be attached to how he plays. These are all mental perspectives. And when your expectations that he has to win the Masters in order to get to the Grand Slam, he has to win the Open Championship at home. These are the things that get professional golfers into trouble when they start to project forward and get these expectations. They don't know they're doing it, and they don't know how destructive it is and what kind of a barrier it has. And they've got to hit rock bottom before they can then rebound up. It happens in lots in life and a lot in other sports as well.
I think when you look at it too, Bob, I think too, to Richard's point, I think when you dig deep down into the archives of, the soul of great golfers, and you look at a guy like Phil Mickelson, perfect. He's exactly the same person. His career is over as far as winning major championships. But if you dug deep down enough, he's not going to talk about the Masters he won. He's going to talk about the US Open he didn't win.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Guys, fascinating. It is, it's the best time of the year for me. It means the beginning of the golf season for most of us.
And pimento sandwiches.
And pimento cheese sandwiches.
Well, they're $2 now, Bob. So I don't know.
Well, I know. Inflation has kicked in everywhere. Fortuitously,
Jenny will cover you.
Fortuitously, the fee that you're getting for this program, Lego, has remained exactly the same as it has for years and years.
Half a pimento sandwich.
It's great seeing both of you and having a chance to chat with you. Hopefully we'll get a chance to do it again soon. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Wonderful to be with you guys. Appreciate the opportunity.
Enjoyed it, fellas.
Bye-bye.
Ian Leggett, Richard Zolkel, back after this. Bob McCowan, John Shannon.
So you're picking Spieth, right?
I am. Yeah. And part of it is because I like the kid. And DJ leaves me cold. I admire the skill set of the guys that we talked about. I like Justin Thomas too. So, I'd probably, he'd be okay. DeChambeau, I haven't warmed up to yet.
He's fun to watch.
I'll give you that. Yeah. Koepka has the best record for majors of the last while. I don't know how healthy Koepka is. He leaves me cold too. I think he has the personality of a kitchen table. Mm-hmm. And I don't think Rory McIlroy is, I don't think his game is in shape. And so I think Spieth and Thomas, which would be interesting because these are two pretty good friends, right?
I think we're going to see a repeat, Bob. I think we are. I think Dustin Johnson is going to win again.
Why?
Well, I think that once you've won there, I think there it becomes there's a lot more confidence in the game that you play on the golf course, and I think that his game matches perfectly for this golf course. He can hit the ball long. His short game, his putting is going to be fine. I think Dustin Johnson wins.
Two things. What you saw in October is going to have nothing to do with what you're going to see in the spring. Those are two entirely different golf courses. But DJ has played well there historically. Yes. I think he finished second
when he's not falling, when he's not falling downstairs.
Yeah, besides the wind. So I can't argue with you, to tell you the honest to goodness truth. In any event, for those of you that are interested, and why wouldn't you be, it all begins bright and early tomorrow morning. And three Canadians in the field this year to keep an eye on. Again, our thanks to Leggett and Zokel for Shannon and McCowan. We'll see you again tomorrow. Goodbye, everybody.